Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome back to another episode of RC Stuff, powered by Hobbywing. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. As always, Charlie Sawanka, that's me, here with Mr. Mike Chen. Mr. Chen, good day, sir. How are you doing?
I'm well. How about yourself?
I can't complain. My kid brother was just in town, so I got to take him to the ranch to go do some motoing and scaling, and it made a fine example of how easy rock crawl driving may appear and how difficult it is when you have actual tricky lines, like stuff that we could drive normally. He was stuck on for a very long time. it was good to get out with a non-super hard RC nerd. So my brother, he works on a mushroom farm in Wisconsin, and he's a pretty busy guy. So he got a couple weeks off. He actually drove cross-country with his moto and his bicycle in the back of his truck and came out and hung out with me and the kids for like five or six days. He was here almost a week. Got to do one of the Taco Tuesday rides with us. So it was nice to have my kid brother in town and remind me of how unhealthy my lifestyle is, because he like. It was good. It's good. I miss you, Uncle Dak. We already miss you. He's only been gone a few days. So that's been good. And we got a bunch of miles in on our motorcycles, which was refreshing because if you didn't know, I have a motorcycle addiction that's been interrupted by broken motorcycles over the last several months and a broken me for a while there. But finally got one of my Groms back together using the old, worn out, blown up one with the newer crashed one. And I got a bike that runs again. So that's been good to have back in action.
Nailed it.
Yeah. You may be tuning in to enter to win some free RC stuff. That's the real reason most people find us is they find out that we give away free RC stuff. Next reason is all the pertinent information that we give you about your RC, lovely world of RC. If you are just tuning in to find out how to enter to win, you're going to have to listen a little bit longer. I'm not going to tell you yet, but we're going to tell you here in just a little bit. Before we get to that, we will do this week's winner right off the bat, because he won because of his question. It opened up a lot of things that I started thinking about, and I really appreciated him taking the time to ask us a relevant question. This week's winner from Orange, California, Tom Akery. It's two A's and looks like Acre. Anyway, he's a A-scale off-road guy. He runs a little USGT. And his question for us, for a competitive RC racer, how often should you replace your speed control? He recently replaced the speed control and he felt the difference in braking and throttle response. Cheers. Cheers to you, Tom. I like that one. With electronics, the idea is that they should last forever until they break. That's the way most of us would look at that, I would think. Like, you know, my blender maybe doesn't really lose performance over the years until it stops working. In the world of RC car, like especially very high frequency speed controls, there's a lot of switching going on, and that switching creates some on the surface of the parts heat buildup from a phenomenon called ripple current. And you could call it what you will, but it's basically when the MOSFET is switching on, the power is flowing. And when the MOSFET switches off, the power wants to keep flowing and it builds up at the off side of the MOSFET and creates some heat. On the speed control, any industrial speed control or electronic motor speed control of any type, there are probably bigger capacitors than there are the actual drive circuit itself. Like if you, even in today's speed controls, if you take a power capacitor and hold it up next to one of the phases of the speed control, the power cap's probably a good amount larger than any given phase of the speed control as far as like square footage goes. This ripple current is what damages and wears out the electronics from the heat cycles and all that. So the power capacitor is the part that deals with all of that, that big dangling thing that's on your speed control. A lot of times they're built into the speed control. So replacing the power capacitor is like the refresh on the speed control. In my old days of racing, working at Novak and traveling around doing events and stuff like that, people would bring their speed controls, and back then we would solder the wires onto the battery every single run, and the wires would wick solder up them. The power caps, you had to install them yourself, how they got installed, how secure they were. They'd get hit, dented, stuff like that. And basically, the fix or the rebuild on a speed control was to replace the wires and the power capacitor. These days, the wires are pre-soldered on most of the speed controls, so you don't have to mess with that. The power capacitors are also packaged better, so you can mount them more securely. So that's less of an issue with damage, but they do still see a lot of current, and they do wear out over time. So if you have a speed control that's been run good and hard for a season of racing, throw a fresh power capacitor on there once in a while, and that'll kind of keep it fresh, if that makes any sense. The other one that I run into all of the time, and no one, I get laughed at, like something we use in service support all the time, is bad plugs. My plugs are fine. My batteries are new. My solder joints are fine. So you think, until you actually get down, solder some fresh plugs on there, think about how tight they used to be compared to how tight they are now. Look inside your battery tube or the battery side of the connector, because that's usually the receptacle, if you will, for the discoloration. Being black or real dirty is a, you know, sign of bad connection. So keeping plugs clean and fresh, and then the parts where you're plugging in and out all the time, those do wear. They get surface wear on them, so that's going to build up dirt. It's going to peel off the coating. You're going to get corrosion buildup. All sorts of goofy stuff happens to your plugs that you don't realize, and a lot of them is with how loose they get too. So those are the big things that I try to help folks with when I go to races now. Like, hey, let's take a look at all this stuff. Have you ever replaced a power capacitor? The speed control is 2 or 3 years old. Definitely throw a new power capacitor on there. One of the simple tests, people, how do you tell if a power cap's good or bad? Is there a capacitor tester? I like to, I have unlimited power capacitors at my disposal, so it's easier for me to say. But if your power capacitor is good, it'll hold charge for a decent amount of time. So you plug the battery in, unplug it. You could go as far as checking it with a voltmeter. You could see if the speed control, after a 2 or 3 count, if you can push the button, if it has enough power left in the cap to make the light blink when you first try to turn it on. That sort of stuff is a good indicator that the power capacitor is still capable of holding a charge and doing some of its job type of deal. So maybe not needed to be replaced just yet, but, you know, never a bad thing to replace a power capacitor, never a bad thing to put new plugs on. And then the other one that I wrote down here is calibration and firmware updates. Sometimes your new speed control is better because it has new firmware on it. Sometimes it's better because you calibrated the new one when you installed it and you don't realize that the output of your throttle channel, your neutral, endpoint things have shifted over time, because the pot on the speed control, or on the radio itself rather, the throttle pot on your radio is a mechanical pot. It's like a rheostat basically. And that can change a little bit as you've used your radio for a very long time. You race in dusty conditions, dust gets inside your radio, messes with that as well. So recalibrating of your speed control every once in a while doesn't hurt in any stretch of the imagination. Like, you're not going to wear out the calibration process. You're not going to mess anything up by recalibrating it. If you do feel like you messed it up from recalibrate, just do it again. Like, it just didn't take right. So just go again, or you did it wrong. Watch the videos. There's lots of videos that I've posted that we have walkthroughs on the website of how to do the calibration. It's pretty straightforward. And there's a picture in your instruction manual of how to do the calibration as well. I know, shocker. Mike, do you have anything to add to worn out speed controls from the drone side of things? Because I know you guys deal with stuff like that also.
We generally kind of break them before we actually wear them out. So
I like that. If you're not familiar with drone racing, before we go too far, I want to say it's because the speed control is like an integral part of the frame. Like, it's a structural part of the build. That's why
they're not quite structural anymore. Maybe way back when it used to be, but that's kind of gone by the wayside. But still hitting things at, you know, 100 miles an hour. Or no, 99, yeah, no, according to the FAA, tends to break things. So, yeah.
There's a lot more impact when a drone hitting a steel pole or dirt McGirting with no bodywork or body posts or anything to really absorb it, you know.
And exactly.
They're going through, what is it, 1,500 milliamps in 90 seconds? That's a lot of load.
Yeah. Try 1500 and probably about 45 seconds.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So, you know, things and stuff. The power plug thing is a common thing, because I've had a few that have made it long enough where I've actually melted the plugs together, like the XC60s. I've literally had them melt together to the point where I'm flying and it's like, oh, my battery disconnected. I go pick it up. I'm like, no, battery's still plugged in. You go to try to pull it apart, and you're like,
not so much. So we've done that with the short course trucks, even at Mark's track, more than a few times. Like, those guys, like, I can't unplug my battery. What do I do? I'm like, you're screwed.
You're done. You need new plugs anyway. Just clip the wire.
Right. Pretty much
one at a time.
That it needs to be replaced. both of them to be safe. Like, even if you get it unplugged, replace both of them.
Uh-huh.
I think that maybe if you were to go percentage-wise, probably 20% or more of the topics that we talk about here bring up plugs. Maybe even 50%, because it's such an important factor when it comes to toys working correctly, good power delivery.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us to a couple other topics, and I touched on one of them real briefly, was firmware updates. And Mike and I were discussing this before, and we were both like, should we point out the fact that if it's working fine, there's no reason to update it? And I often agree with that. And we get stuff where something was working correctly, now it's not working correctly. When it's without doing anything else, I updated the firmware to see if that would fix it. And it makes a whole nother set of problems, because the speed control gets reset. So whatever settings and things like that were made to make it work all went away, and you start that process over now. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Firmware updates are important. And for some of the racers out there, especially if you're going to Roar sanctioned events where there's the spec class uses Blinky, you have to do the updates. So that brings us to what I think is a very important topic during the firmware updates, is that it's serious business. Don't be taking calls while you're doing the updates. Don't be, if you've got it hooked up to your computer, don't be doing anything with the computer. Don't be moving the items around while you're doing these updates. Because if you lose connection or anything gets interrupted during a firmware update, I mean, literally, just like anything else in the electronics world, you could brick it and it won't work anymore. And there's really no real way to bring it back in some situations. I say some situations because, let's say you're doing an update with the app and the OTA module. It gets disconnected for whatever reason, and you can't get it to reconnect using the OTA and the app. Sometimes, every once in a great while, you can use the Windows PC program, the USB link, and you can use the LCD programming box to force the update through, and sometimes you can salvage a speed controller that way. Not every time, because I had a guy, he's like, so do I go out and buy the box? I'm like, no, you find someone who has the box and try it. And then you fix your speed control and you don't have to buy anything. You just use the box one time to force this update. But there are situations where that does not bring the speed control back to life either. So it's not, depends on a lot of variables that are way over my head, but basically it works sometimes, sometimes it doesn't. And then the other one that me and Mike just ran into the other day was, Windows PC means Windows PC. We have a USB program that you can use the LCD box. You can download it to your Windows PC, install that, and you can do setting changes and updates to the box as well as the speed controls through that. It should not be used on an emulated computer. Like, I got a Mac, and I could do one of them hard drive partition emulator things that makes me be able to put Windows on my Mac. That doesn't work. Something's different, and we've had people run into problems that way. They use a regular Windows PC, and we never hear from them again. So that means they're out enjoying their RC car, not doing a warranty claim on it. So pro tip on that one. Yeah. And then what was the other one?
Oh, distance of the OTA.
Thank you. That was it. Exactly. Go ahead. Tell them. You reminded me.
Basically, when you're doing an update, don't move your phone around. You want to keep it about an arm's length away from the OTA, but you don't want it to be closer than that either. Because there's just like radio frequency things. And
the bubble of works and doesn't work.
Yes, exactly. About an arm's length away. Put your phone by your armpit. And OTA at the tip of your fingers, that's the distance. Don't move your phone. Don't take a call. And honestly, every time I'm doing a firmware update using the OTA, I also put my phone in do not disturb.
Yeah.
So airplane to make
mode,
sure that.
Yeah. I'll even go as far as airplane mode and just turning on Bluetooth, because we've had background apps start to do stuff and interrupt things as well. I mean, we make it sound scary, and that's only so you guys don't have problems. And if truth be told, I've done this several times out in the field and not had any problems with anything. But, you know, we do get the occasional, we don't know what happened call, and it doesn't work now, and they're not able to tell us a lot of information other than, I don't think anything happened. So we got to assume something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, don't pick your phone up and start walking around with it while it's updating.
That could be hard to do, because all of us are addicted to our phones and we want to see how many likes we got. So waiting that 90 seconds for a speed control to finish update can be infuriating, I'm sure.
Also, the other thing too is if you have your phone set to a short lock screen, Yeah. Like if you have it set to, right. you know, shut the screen to lock the screen in a minute, make sure you're like, just tap the screen every like 30 seconds or so, just to make sure that screen doesn't lock. Cause if it locks, it will also cause a problem.
Ask me how
I know that one.
We speak from experience on lots of these, not just customer experiences, our own.
Yep.
There's nothing more awesome than the engineer sending you a prototype to do firmware things to, and you totally flake and make it broken. And you're like, oh, please send me another one. My bad. So that covers firmware updates and some of the tech stuff that I wanted to address, because I've spent some time at the track. We've been working with some racers, and I thought that this stuff was pretty cool, and we should mention it here so more people know about it. Ooh. One is the data logging features of the XC Run line of speed controls, and now the Max G2 series as well. Some of the speed controls in our series have always had some form of data logging, but over the last year and a half, since the G series started to happen to the various lines, we have been adding a real-time data feature to the speed controls so that on the bench, you can have your OTA connected, or if the speed control has Bluetooth built into it like the XR2 does or the Max 6G2, that you can open the app and look at this, what the speed control is doing live on your screen, RPM, throttle position, voltage. If the speed control has amp draw availability, it'll show that as well. And temperatures as well, because if you use Hobbywing motors, they have temperature sensors inside. Non-Hobbywing motors don't always show the temperature information. But the real-time data does work with non-Hobbywing motors, just not for that motor temperature. You still get the rest of the stuff. A common mistake is that you're going to be able to have your phone open and drive your car around and look at this data on your phone as it happens. So you like actively check temperatures as you're driving. If you only drove like 30 feet away, totally would work. You could do that. But if you drive any farther than like 15, 20 feet, you're probably going to disconnect and the Bluetooth's not going to show you the live data. It's made as like a benchtop tuning situation or doing some very basic checks. It could also make you be able to build a benchtop dyno, because you could use this setup to do motor tests, load tests, stuff like that with a dummy chassis of some sort. Like I've always envisioned making like a load car that I could install motors in that had like drums on the wheels that made load, and you could just rev the motor up and down with the radio and look at the data. So this gives you like a very realistic full-size dyno type of application that you can do with the real-time data. Now, there's more, but wait, there's more. The speed control's built-in data logging is pretty basic, and it'll show you minimums and maximums depending on what you're looking at. Minimum voltage, if the speed control's got current, it'll show you maximum current, maximum RPM, as well as the max temperatures that it sees over the duration of the run or that on-off cycle. And then the speed control saves a bunch of those in there as well, so you could review all your whole day's worth of data logs at the end of it. With the OTA installed, you can get what I call enhanced data logging, where you see the run from when the speed control gets turned on to when you turn it off. So you can look at the graph. You can open up your phone or your tablet. You can go into the real-time data, go to history, and you can see from the OTA file that's there the logs that the OTA has saved. So you can do that throughout the day as well. Those saves onto the OTA, and you can go back and look at them, or you can look at them right after the runs, so you can analyze your various runs. And having the graph that you can zoom in, you can turn the data lines on and off. It's pretty cool. I got into using it a little bit with some testing that we were doing down at SDRC last month, and it came in handy. And we did a Charlie Show video on it to show you the ins and outs and all that as well. If you didn't know, we have a YouTube channel. It's called Hobbywing Official. That's on YouTube. And I have a playlist on there called The Charlie Show, where I do everything from unboxings to tech tips to stuff like we talk about here on the show, as well as some of the nerd ventures that I get onto to show you how fun RC can be if you don't care about the cost of your electronics. It's not actually true. I don't beat on the stuff too bad. But my rock crawl stuff does get the waterproof testing all the time. So by all means, enjoy.
Ooh,
so, I got something. Oh, please. Yes.
While you're on that topic too, battery health. That was the one thing I wanted to bring up too.
Okay.
Because I meant to say it before when we were talking about plugs, but it kind of got away from me for a second. But yeah, battery health is one thing that I think a lot of people sometimes forget about.
It's easy.
And then all of a sudden,
the charger says it's good. It charges it up. The voltage looks fine. Should be fine, right? That makes sense.
But Yeah. Just because the voltage is full doesn't mean that the battery doesn't have the capacity anymore, or the battery has the capacity anymore. It's more like the more that is what
the
I'm
ability
trying
to sustain the current to equal the capacity.
Yes, thank you. That yeah. Because what will happen a lot of times too, when a battery goes bad, is you'll get what they call voltage sag, where the voltage all of a sudden hits the cutoff voltage,
right?
And then all of a sudden everything goes, meh, we hit cutoff voltage, or even shut down sometimes, depending on how hard of a load you put on it. Right. And then you take the battery out and you're like, you plug it into your charge and you're like, but it's almost full. Why is it hitting low voltage cut? Well, usually at that case, you want to check your battery. And if your charger gives you a mAh reading when it's charging, that's one of the best indicators I like to go by. So, you know, we'll make it easy. If your battery is a 3000 mAh battery and you started charging at 3.8 volts per cell, you should get about 1500 mAh charged into that battery. If you're at 3.2, it should be very close to that full 3000.
Right.
That is all.
Yeah, I was thinking we run into that all the time at the Peacock Pit, because some of our less than regular racers will show up with their old batteries and we'll run 5 or 6 laps. They'll get a shutdown or two. They'll think their battery's dead, and they go through this vicious cycle. And then once they get a little bit of cycle through the battery, because they've been so old and sitting either charged or not charged, they start to work a little bit better. Then maybe they clean their plugs and stuff like that too, from the plugging it in and out. But yeah, battery health, always something to keep in mind. I have a couple more, well, maybe just one or two more tech topics. Actually, it's just one. It counts as two because it talks about brakes and throttle. And a feature of the XR10 Pro G2S is the variable frequency for the drive and the brake side. One of the trickier things in either spec motor racing and even some of the modified motor racing is getting throttle feel right. You can get your bottom of the throttle to feel great, then your mid-range either is too aggressive, maybe it falls on its face and it all comes in steamroller at the end of the throttle, or even the opposite of that. It just kind of depends on gearing, timing, all that fun stuff. So variable throttle frequency allows you to set different drive frequencies at different throttle positions. So for spec racing, for example, you want a lot of rip up on the bottom, but you don't want it to spin tires after that, depending, you know, obviously on track conditions. But there have been more dirt races coming up where this has been a very prevalent thing. And starting with the initial throttle position down at like lower frequencies, let's say 1 kilohertz to maybe 4 kilohertz, and then you can have it ramp all the way up to 32 kilohertz by the end of the throttle, can make for a very smooth, or almost it feels like it shifts gears almost, is what I've been told. I don't run enough to say that I noticed the big difference, but the drivers were very excited about it. So this variable frequency stuff came around with Ed Whitecotton is the guy that gets credit for cluing me into this early on. He's an on-road racer guy here in Northern California. He's been around for years. I actually raced with him years ago at Novak, and he's just a racer type dude. I think he's into, it's not dirt bikes, it's go-karts, something like that. But he's on-road guy, super RC nerd. And he's been doing a lot of his own testing and kind of sharing information with me. So hats off to Ed for cluing me into this, and told a couple other racers about it, and they fell in love with it. So if you're looking for a little extra, check out the variable frequency stuff. And something else that I talked about in the latest Charlie Show episode too, so you can check that out if you need a little more visual on all of that. Next up, Mike's idea, the ambassador program. And only because we've talked about it for 4 or 5 episodes now, you could just go back an episode or two and give that a listen if you haven't gotten the details on it. But you're going to nominate either yourself or an awesome RC enthusiast that brings the fun to the RC friends. You can email that to us, rcstuff@hobbywing.com. Put ambassador in the subject line for us.
A story would be nice too.
Yeah, the story and all that fun stuff. But you're going to find out all the details in a previous episode because you want to. Up next, the sponsorship. If you are a racer, an aspiring pro, you do lots of club racing, you want to get sponsored by Hobby Wing, you're in perfect timing. This is the sponsorship open enrollment will be going live when this episode is posted or the day after. So just go to hobbywingdirect.com. It should be posted there on the blog. You can go look us up on the Instagrams at Hobbywing. You can find us on Facebook. It's Hobbywing North America. It'll all be posted everywhere. You should be able to find it easily. And if you can't, you can email northamerica@hobbywing.com on Monday. And you can ask them, hey, I heard the sponsorship thing's up. I can't find it. I want to be sponsored. Where is it? And we can send you a link. But I guess half the test is being able to find the link, so maybe don't do that. Mike gets to go to the Hobby Wing Winter Nationals. It's our fourth year, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, of sponsoring the Winter Nationals with the good folks of Sky Ready RC. Mike will be out there. It's the first weekend in December. It's the same time that I'm going to be at the International Carpet Championships in Cleveland. So Mike will be in Texas. I'll be in Cleveland. And I'm also getting to check in on the U.S. Indoor Champs, the on-road race that happens the week before the Indoor Off-Road or International Off-Road Championships. Mind you, these are all Hobby Wing flagship events. So you can come out, meet Mike at the drone race in Texas. It's in Templeton, Texas, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right. I got to check
an hour outside of the greater Dallas area, I think. Or I forget. What airport do you fly to? It's an hour away from there.
I thought it was Austin.
Oh, you're right. You're right. It is.
You got me second guessing myself right now when you said Dallas. I'm like,
they got it posted at MultiGP on their events. They've got it posted on their Sky Ready RC page, and they have a Facebook page called the Hobby Wing Winter Nationals. You can find it all very easily. Even I found it. And I think that's it. That's all my topics I wrote down.
No, you forgot one.
I did? Which one?
Yeah, we got to circle back. Well, we kind of got to circle back around for that one. But how do you win some free RC stuff, Charlie?
Oh, see, I knew there was a reason we kept you around, Mike. Winning free RC stuff from RC Stuff, powered by Hobby Wing, is very easy. All you have to do is send us an email. The email address is rcstuff@hobbywing.com. You're going to want to include your name, your address, your t-shirt size. Type out your email address for me as well. Tell us a story about you and your RC, into it, what you're into, what you might want to get into. If you have any questions for the show, that's the same place. Even if you've already sent an entry and you have a new question for us, you can send the questions at any time, rcstuff@hobbywing.com. If you got a favorite RC nerd that you want us to interview, maybe they got stuff to share with us here on the show, you want us to ask them questions, drop us their information. I'll reach out to them, see if they want to chat with us. We're more than happy to bring on some guests, of course. Again, the email address, rcstuff@hobbywing.com. Thanks, Mike.
Got you.
And then I think that's everything. We did the winner. Congratulations to... I lost his name in my mix here. Tom. It was Tom. His name was Tom. But that is going to do it, folks. Another episode of RC Stuff, powered by Hobby Wing. As always, Charlie Sawanka with Mr. Mike Chen. We will see you all next time.
Bye.
James is still fast.
Oh, we almost jinxed it.
We did it.
Almost forgot.